The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are now entering the Second Fiddle Comics podcast, starring Mark Clare and Rimzo Martinez.
They say great things come in fours. The four tops. Connect Four. Actually, I'm not sure anybody's ever said that until now, but either way, today we're going to be looking at my favorite book of all time. Not really, but when I was a kid, it was my first book, my first comic book love, and my favorite book for that I really followed for a long time. That is The Fantastic Four. To do so, I'm here, of course, as always, with my partner in comic book crime, the rambunctious one himself, Rimzo Martinez. Rimzo, what's shaking, buddy?
Fantastic Four was really your favorite?
At the time. Like it was the first book that I... Because I started with this book, with the story that we're going to read today, and I stuck with it for a long time. Whereas, you know, my true favorites quickly became, like, Spider-Man, Batman. Those are the ones that I really clung to in the beginning. X-Men. But Fantastic Four, like, it was the first comic I picked up, and we'll be discussing that issue today. And I stuck with this particular run from Tom DeFalco from that day for, like, 4 or 5 years. So it just has a special place in my heart as sort of, like, the first comic that I grabbed and also stuck with for an extended run. So, I mean, it's not my favorite of all time now, but kind of in the moment, it was like my constant book, whereas I would jump in and out of some other books here and there. But I had always stuck with the Fantastic Four for that, you know, that first segment of the Mark Clare fanboy run, you might say.
I kind of get it. You know, I was never a fan of the Fantastic Four in the sense of I was collecting all their stuff, but I always liked seeing them in video games. I saw the movies. I always liked their appearances when they would team up with like Spider-Man or the X-Men or something. What I will concede is that, and depending on your reaction to this, it'll tell me whether or not you completely agree. But like, I always felt like the Ultimate Fantastic Four were better.
You would think that.
Because I love the Ultimate Fantastic Four. The Ultimate Fantastic Four.
All right, we're going to do this. We're going to do it live. You're going to tell me right now. You're going to give me a run, whether it's the first four issues or some other run you think is better representative of it. I will go read that. It will be the next edition of What Mark Missed on Patreon. Patreon.com/secondprintpod to hear that in the future. You don't need to do me right now. You can send me it later if you want.
But. Oh no, I could do it. I will tell you right now, and I will send you the link. It's the Frightful Four run in which the zombified Fantastic Four that you see in the early, I think, 20s of the Ultimate Fantastic Four, they return and they try and bring the Marvel Zombieverse to the Ultimate Verse.
Okay, that sounds fun. I'm down for that.
Sounds freaking awesome.
Sounds like it you're kind of cheating by inserting a zombie story while trying to claim this is like the greatest version of Fantastic Four ever, but I'll let it slide. I don't keep it open.
If there was no Ultimate Fantastic Four, there would be no Ultimate Marvel Zombies. I'm sorry, there would be no Marvel Zombies, period. Well, so you could thank the Ultimate Fantastic Four for that.
All right. Well, fair enough. I mean, so in that, can you clarify something for me? So the Maker is an evil version of Reed Richards, but is he the same version of Reed Richards in the Ultimate Fantastic Four, or is he an even other alternate version?
Yes,
he is.
That's the scary thing about it. The heroic young Reed Richards you see throughout the Ultimate Fantastic Four and the Ultimate Universe is the Maker.
Who is now has been kind of grandfathered into the Marvel Universe through Jonathan Hickman's Secret Wars chicanery. So he still pops in and out now again. I last saw the Maker in very early on. He was in Donnie Cates' Venom run. I enjoyed his appearance there. I enjoy a maniacal Reed Richards. I will say that
it'll never feel right. But, you know, what What's really tragic is that so Ultimate Fantastic Four, as I was going to say earlier, was the first book I actually started collecting monthly on my own. It was the first book that was on top of my pull list when I went to my local comic shop and I said, I want you to hold the new issues of these.
So it's like a parallel, man. It's just like you're the ultimate version. You're like ultimate Mark Claire. You're the ultimate parallel to everything I was doing. So this is the first book I read regularly, and you went into the alternate dark side version for your first run.
You mean the profitable side, because the regular Fantastic Four comic was not selling very well for a very long time. But yeah, I mean, it just goes to show.
I don't care about sales, Remzo.
It just goes to show that each generation has their own. But the ties that bind are the fact that Reed Richards, Sue Storm, Johnny Storm, and Ben Grimm will always seem to stick around in one shape or another.
Indeedy, indeedy. And like I said, like I mentioned there, I do sometimes, but I will do it soon now that we've made this agreement. I do a show called What Mark Missed, where I dip into suggestions from Remzo from the dark period of my comic fandom, which is for approximately, I want to say 2004 to maybe 2013-ish, somewhere in there. So I will commit right now to reading that for the next episode. Find that over on Patreon at patreon.com/secondprintpod, where until the end of this month, we are being so very generous in offering two free months for anyone who joins at an annual level as an annual patron. That could be worth up to $150 for him. So you know what? How many comics you can buy for $150?
There's a lot of tacos, Mark.
Not as many as when I bought this one, because with this first issue of the Fantastic Four, I don't cheat, don't look, unless you already did, unless that's what you're doing right now. What do you think this first issue cost? It came out in, I believe, I want to say 1991.
$1.25.
Even less, it was $1. This is right before the $1.25 price increase, which I do remember, because I was like, oof. What? Now I can get like basically one comic less a week? Unbelievable. But nonetheless, this is we're going to start this. This is for people who want to follow along at home. This is going to be Fantastic Four number 356 to 358. Now, interestingly enough, 356 was not my first issue of the Fantastic Four. 357 was my first issue of the Fantastic Four. Why? I don't know. I just was at a comic book store and I was picking out comics for the first time. It was my friend Eric, who you know, one of our very first patrons, our very first Kirby Club member, who is also, thankfully, thanks to him, giving away an X-Men Inferno, a copy of the X-Men Inferno. Not the new one, not the Hickman-inspired one, but the original Inferno. So
there's no cuckolding in this Inferno.
As far as I know. But yeah, our first annual patron, who it might have already happened at the time of this recording. So if that already happened, sorry, you can't get it. But the first annual patron we get during this promotional period will also, in addition to all the other perks they get, will get that delivered right to them by Eric. He's going to deliver it directly. That's how helpful this guy is.
Patreon.com/secondprintpod.
There you go. Patreon.com/secondprintpod. Thank you very much. We will now get into today's episode. Looking at my very first foray into the Fantastic Four. Oh, yes, I was saying, I just picked up issue number 357 kind of out of nowhere, because I think I kind of liked the cover. It showed, like, the Thing going and Johnny fighting, which at the time, I didn't even know who they were. I literally knew nothing about comics except for, like, Eric would bring in comics, and I sat at his lunch table, and I would, like, and it was during, like, the time of, like, Venom and Carnage, and I was like, oh, this stuff looks really cool. Yeah, he showed me a lot of, like, the Todd McFarlane stuff, and then I don't remember if I went to the store with him or if I just one day decided to go to the store on my own, because this is when I was starting to make a little money on my own, believe it or not. When I was like 12 years old, I was mowing lawns and watching neighbors' dogs and all this stuff. So I had some expendable income to me. $15-$20 for a kid my age in 1991, that was like a huge amount of money. So I went to the comic book store and I started just picking up anything that looked cool. And I distinctly remember this edition. I had no idea what the Fantastic Four was, but I picked up this book, I read it, and it sucked me right in. So that's going to be the second issue we look at. I actually kind of picked it up an issue in the middle of the arc. But the issue before that, just to kind of complete the story arc here, is Fantastic Four number 356 from Tom DeFalco and Paul Ryan. And this team was on this book for quite a long time. I believe, I want to say at least like 3 years after this, maybe even longer, because I continued with their run. I continued with this run right until...
Did DeFalco do an Avengers run?
I'm sure he
did.
Did
we cover something by him?
He has done almost everything at Marvel at some point. I mean, he was like Marvel's kind of go-to hand for... Never blew you away, but he was a steady hand. He could always keep a book on solid footing. That's how I would describe Tom DeFalco. I'm pretty sure they did this run. I could be wrong. Straight up until what's the thing with Onslaught Heroes Reborn? Straight up until they transformed into like the Jim Lee FF. But anyway, we start off this issue number 356. On the cover, we see the Puppet Master, and as well as one of the new warriors, Marvel Boy, What a loser this guy is. The Vance, we met him in the Heroes Return Avengers that we looked at last year. And open the cover. First thing you see, as you often see in an issue of Fantastic Four, you see the Thing smashing things. It's clobbering time, baby. It's always clobbering time with the Thing. And as he often is, he is going after Johnny Storm, because the Thing always goes after Johnny Storm, and he always destroys a bunch of what I have to imagine is extremely expensive scientific equipment while he is doing so. So this is just a Fantastic Four staple. I don't know why they let the Thing just continually smash things and continually destroy equipment, but Reed never seems terribly upset by it. So he's more tolerant of Thing than of his own wife, apparently. The reason that the Thing is so angry is because someone has smashed or melted, I guess, this clay little piece of him, this clay sculpture of him that was made by Alicia Masters. Now, let's talk about Alicia Masters for a second. Alicia Masters is the stepdaughter of the villain, the Puppet Master. She's been a Fantastic Four staple since the very, very beginning. She did fall in love with the Thing. Alicia is blind, so she sees Ben Grimm's, of course, inner beauty. Of course, she can also feel his weird rocky face and body, which is probably strange. But nonetheless, she fell in love with him. They were an item. And then, which we'll get into this later in the story, but just for the reader's sake, then Secret Wars happened. And I forget exactly what happened in Secret Wars, but Ben did not come back with the Fantastic Four at the time. And he was actually, for some reason, they came back and She-Hulk had replaced him. I forget why. So She-Hulk is in the Fantastic Four. And in the meantime, Johnny hooks up with Ben's old love interest, Alicia Masters. While he's gone, he comes back, is furious, of course, eventually gets over it. Johnny, Alicia, marry, and here we are. Any questions so far, Remsen?
Now, you know, as Bruno Mars would say, this bitch got me paying her rent.
Speaking of Bruno Mars, have you ever heard or seen anything about the theory that he is Michael Jackson's son?
I've always, it's not a secret that he's basically like a modern Michael Jackson type of performer, but to say that he's his son, he's
well, apparently there's actual reasons. It's kind of like the Castro Justin Trudeau thing. Like, there's actual life circumstances.
The nose shows
the
it.
The timing actually makes sense.
I'm just saying, you put the photos there, they look like father and son.
And so do Bruno Mars and Michael Jackson. It's uncanny if you actually put them next to each other. If you look at a young Michael Jackson from the 70s before all the weird skin things happened, he looks.
When he was still
exactly
black,
I was trying to say he looked exactly like Bruno Mars does basically today. And apparently Michael, this is all stuff my wife told me and I haven't researched it any other way beyond that, but I believe it.
That makes it better.
And apparently Michael Jackson always said his first son would be named Peter after like Peter Pan, you know, boy who never grew up. And apparently Bruno Mars's real name is Peter, and his mom knew Michael Jackson and was around Michael Jackson at around the time that he would have had to have been conceived. So again, I have only one source, and it's my wife. But I'm going to choose to believe it because he looks exactly like him. It's really uncanny once you see it.
Not even just the fact that Bruno Mars can move like him, can sing like Michael, can write lyrics that are Michael Jackson reminiscent. There are just little things about them because people have done comparison videos. I could believe it.
I'm going to believe it.
I'm not saying I do, but I can totally see it.
Indeed, I agree. Oh, anyway.
Rowan Farrow is Frank Sinatra's son.
Oh, I could see that too, I guess.
Yeah.
I'll believe any of these theories, to be honest with you. It's just more fun to believe. But of all of them, I mean, the Trudeau-Castro thing, I 100% believe that. It's insane how much they look alike when you actually put them side to side.
He looks, I mean, if he didn't look so starkly different than his father, I don't know if I would believe everything else. But when you see Trudeau Sr., and compare him to Trudeau Jr. And then when you take Castro and compare him to Trudeau, it's like, yeah, that's your daddy.
Like his mom was visiting Castro. This is now the who's a secret son of who conspiracy show. We've tossed out the format. But when you see her next to Castro, like there's even pictures of her like looking gazingly at Castro. Like she was in Cuba at the right time for him to have been conceived and have all the math add up. So I buy that one, and I buy Bruno Mars and Michael Jackson like about as much as I can believe anything. To be honest.
You know how those French Canadians are. I could dig Indeed. It.
Moving along though, yes. Yeah, as I mentioned, the Thing is very upset because someone smashed his sculpture. He assumes it was Johnny, I don't know why, but I guess because it's melted. So he assumed that, you know, it got fucked up. And so he's angry because he's like, oh, you know, you just kind of like rubbing it in now. You're married to like my ex-girlfriend. And now you're going to, by the way, Alicia made this sculpture. So Alicia is also an artist. And she basically like does realistic art of things that she touches and then recreates them in her clay. And she's also, of course, like I mentioned, daughter of the puppet master who uses like clay and radiation to control people or something, because comics, as we'll see in a minute. So yeah, Thing is going after Johnny. Reed wraps himself around Thing as he often does. Meanwhile, Johnny forms a fire cage around the Thing, but Thing can just not be held back. Thing is going nuts. He wraps Johnny around with like a piece of metal. And then there's one point where Johnny just like basically blows smoke in the thing's face, which I thought was a pretty like kind of inventive use of Johnny's power. You usually just think of the flames and him burning things, but I guess she can actually like blow smoke out of his lungs too, because there's fire everywhere. So why not? But yeah, at the end,
you think he could blow smoke out his ass?
It would stand to reason that he could, because you know, air comes out of there for both those places for regular people. So why not make it smoke if you're Johnny Storm? But anyway,
why not?
So yeah, I mean, and Thing is about to just literally, this would murder Johnny. Like the things that Thing does and they just don't bat an eye at are really incredible. Between all the equipment he destroys and the fact that he literally is about to try to murder Johnny, is only stopped by, I mean, this, you put this rock fist, I know he's got a flaming face, but it's not, he doesn't have a face shield or anything. But luckily Sue is there to throw up her force field and stop Thing from hitting Johnny. Meanwhile, Thing calms down and all is forgiven, as it often is, and Thing just kind of storms off. He's like, oh, y'all seem mighty concerned about Johnny, but nobody gives a hang about me. It figures. I love the way Thing talks, by the way. It never, that old Yancey Street slang that never stops getting me. He says, and she's like, Ben, wait. Sue says, Ben, wait. He says, forget it, Susie. I ain't in the mood. Meanwhile, Alicia is consoling Johnny and say, hey, well, why is Ben so upset? And he's like, I don't know. Something happened to his dumb statue. But like I said, this is the statue.
You blind bitch. Why do you think he's sad?
This is the statue that and Johnny's like, well, can't you fix this? This is like your sculpture. And Alicia says here, she's like, it's also funny, a funny line from Reed, who's always just like fine with Ben no matter what, whether he's hitting on his wife as they did in the very early days of the Fantastic Four or just destroying equipment. Very tolerant Reed. Again, Reed is tolerant of everyone seemingly except his wife. Don't worry, Alicia. That figurine is only a symbol of Ben's underlying anxiety. He's been under tremendous stress lately, Ben. But by the way, he also destroyed $1,000 worth of equipment and tried to murder Johnny. But whatever, all is forgiven. He was stressed out. It's all good. And he says, it does look like the head of this thing was crushed, not melted. Who would have committed such a deliberate act of vandalism? And more importantly, why? By the way, I don't think we ever find out who actually crushed this thing, but whatever. We'll move on. We then see sometime later at the cemetery, we see the puppet master, and he is at the grave of his wife, or former wife, I suppose, Marcia Masters, who is the mother of Alicia Masters. And he's kind of thinking to himself, now, he's talking out loud to, I guess, what he believes to be the spirit or the ghost of his former wife. He says, I don't want to alarm you, Marcia, but I fear that something is seriously wrong with our little girl. That isn't like Alicia. I can only view her from a distance because of the strained relationship I have with the Fantastic Four, but there are many other differences, subtle, disturbing things. So we're not sure what he said before, what the first difference was he said there, because we come in mid-sentence here. Subtle, disturbing things that only a parent would notice. Her entire personality seems to have changed ever since she married the Human Torch. Don't worry, my love, the Puppet Master will solve this mystery. So Puppet Master is on the case. And again, Puppet Master's power.
You think he made her call him Puppet Master when they were in bed?
Who, him and Marcia?
Call me Puppet Master.
You think he always used himself or sometimes? Nah, never mind. I'm not going to get into weird puppet.
We should keep, no.
I'm just not going to get into there. It's too much of a
thing. We already went into so many places. I'll stop.
Yeah. We'll come back to it someday. But yeah, I mean, so for whatever reason, Puppet Master, as he often does, decides to take control of another hero to manipulate him for his own needs. In this case, for whatever reason, he has chosen to create a clay statue along with the radiation that allows him to control people through the clay, because comics. Comic stuff is always ridiculous, but I think if you're going to have something where like clay figurines control another person, there should be like a mystical spiritual element to it. I just don't buy you add radiation to something that looks like someone and it controls them. I know I should buy everything because it's just comics, but even within comics, there's some things that are a little bit of a stretch for me, especially when you could have an easier explanation. Like he's a fucking wizard or something. You know, what do you think? Am I crazy here?
Or he put bat blood in his body and then electrocuted himself.
Or like that, yeah. And then scares the shit out of a child by revealing yourself as a vampire. Yeah, a lot of things you could do.
And then accidentally kills the child. If you don't get that joke, you need to listen to the show way more often.
Exactly. Or just at least last episode. If you're new here, we give you a pass. Go listen to the last episode and it all will be clear. But for whatever reason, he has chosen this total loser, Vance, a.k.a. Marvel Boy, one of the new Warriors to control. So now we hop over to the new Warriors, their training facility, I guess, wherever the hell that is, in the Manhattan penthouse. How many freaking hero teams live in New York? It's insane. It's a crowded city here. Let's see if we can name some new Warriors. I'm going to try to do this just by looking. We have Namorita, we have Speedball, we have Nova. Oh, here's a new Warrior, huh? Is she called Firestorm? No, that's the DC guy. Fireball? Firestar. It's Firestar. And I don't know
Firestar.
Who the other guy is. Do you know who that other guy is?
Kinda Speedball. Looks like
Snake Eyes. No, the other guy.
Oh, the Night Thrasher.
Night Thrasher, there you go. All right, we just named the new Warriors, America's fastest growing comic book game show, exclusively here on the Second Print Comics. Yes, that's right. Name those new Warriors. Anyway, they're in a very, I don't know, an X-Men-esque sort of danger room training situation that isn't terribly interesting. But then after a few pages of this, Vance says, I just received a telepathic flash warning me of danger, incredible danger. And Speedball just goes, uh-huh? Since when do you get telepathic flashes? Like, he's like, these aren't his powers at all. Like, what's going on here? He's like, no time to explain. I must go now. And he just flies off. And meanwhile, we go back to the new Warriors, also obviously concerned by the fact that this guy who doesn't have telepathic powers just got a telepathic something and flew off without saying anything. They're concerned, so they're going to take off after him. Of course they are. And meanwhile, Johnny and Alicia are at Alicia's apartment. You know what I just realized, Remzo? Without even realizing it or thinking about it, you know, I take somewhat meticulous notes for the show to prepare for this. And I did so.
Some would say super anal.
I'm not going to say who, but some might say something like that. Without even realizing it, I never looked at my notes. I've just been going through the thing naturally. Totally forgot I had notes. The training wheels are off. Maybe this is my last day with notes. We'll see. We shall see. But regardless, for now,
it's a new era of Mark just memorizing all of this by heart.
Yes, and I'm not going to mix up issues or episodes anymore either. It's 2020. Wait, what year is it? 2020?
Let's not get too ahead of ourselves.
We'll see. I think I did it.
It's okay, Mark. No one has moved on from 2020.
That's true. That is true. I'm not alone there. Meanwhile, Johnny is at Alicia's apartment, which has a Fantastic Four poster in it, and all this weird art now. Now, she used to make this realistic looking art, but now, I don't know, her art looks like stuff from that house in Beetlejuice. Like, it's like really just weird shapes, like alien looking stuff. And he's like, come on, this statue means so much to Ben. Like, I know you can fix this thing. Like, he's family. And she's like, I don't know, Johnny. I haven't worked on a piece of representative sculpture since before we were married. I'm just not convinced I can properly repair it, which seems weird if she made it in the first place. And he's like, well, you've recently had a few shows with plenty of realistic statues. She's like, well, that was my old work. That was an unsold gallery inventory. This is my new style, and points at this weird looking art, this weird alien looking art. And he's like, ah, sweetie, maybe we can work out a trade. And basically I believe he is offering to provide cunnilingus to his wife, which he should really be doing anyway, by the way. But he even says something hot and delicious.
A hero's gotta do what a hero's gotta do.
Something hot. He's trying to sexually give sexual favors to his wife so she'll fix his fucking statue. Anyway, right as they are figuring this out, Vance, Marvel Boy, loser, busts in, and they're like, whoa, what's going on here? And he just basically grabs Alicia. He's like, I only know that the woman was caught with me, and I have no time to waste on you. He grabs her and just flies off. So Johnny, being, you know, obviously upset that his wife was just, you know, kidnapped by this guy, flies after him, shooting fireballs at him left and right. And meanwhile, the new Warriors, again, just a step behind Marvel Boy, they are chasing after him. They see Johnny shooting fireballs at him. So what do we have? A classic comic book mix-up where the heroes got to fight each other. So Johnny is fighting basically the entire new Warriors, kind of getting his ass kicked. So what does he do? Tosses up that Fantastic Four signal in the sky with his fire. And they see it, of course, Ben and Sue and Reed. And they run out, and apparently in the whatever you call their ship, the Fantastic Four ship, I don't know what it's called. The four plane. I don't remember. I don't even know if it has a name.
The thing.
But either way.
The thing.
The flying thing. Anyway, they go and
the thing.
Again, we get some more hero on hero fighting as Vance is sort of holding Alicia. He says, it involves an alien invasion, mind control, and a complete reversal of reality as we know it. And oh yeah, this is what he's responding to Nova, who's saying, Marvel Boy, do you mind telling us what this was all about before we take on the world's greatest super team? And he says that. He says, like, it's about an alien invasion, mind control. And Nova's just like, what the fuck are you talking about? So Nova flies up to the Fantastic Four and goes to read, and basically Nova is like the voice of, or is trying to be the voice of reason here, but because it's comics again, we got to have a hero on hero throwdown. So the hothead thing, of course, just punches Nova in the face, and now the Fantastic Four has to fight New Warriors. So we get several pages of that. We got Johnny fighting with Firestar, fire on fire action, all that great stuff. And eventually, though, they do, of course, as these things often tend to work out, they do come to their senses and say, like, hey, why are we fighting each other? We're all heroes. And when they see that Vance...
It's because they were contractually obligated.
Because it's in our contract and we need to fill 10 extra pages. And Vance says, like, my friends, my teammates, they need me. I must go. He's kind of like maybe half coming out of the spell or whatever. And Alicia's like, you can go help them. Save them all. Like, stop this fight. This is absurd. And he's like, no, I must join the, he's kind of, it seems like he's fighting the control of Puppet Master. So he breaks free, goes to join the fight. And meanwhile, we see, I don't know why we see him as a shadowy figure. Like, we don't know who it is. We see a voice say, Alicia, I've come for you, child. And she says, who's there? Who are you? By the way, she's blind. You'd think she would just know the voice of her stepdad without even anything else. Whatever. At that moment, something behind me, Johnny gets struck by Marvel Boy, who has joined the foray again. Meanwhile, Puppet Master is confronting Alicia, and he's saying what I said. He's saying, don't you know me, Alicia? Can't you recognize my voice? And she says, no, stay away. Leave me alone. Don't hurt me. And he's like, I would never harm you, child. Is it all the excitement, the confusion, which prevents you from identifying me? Or is it something more? What happened, Alicia? What have they done to you? And he's just kind of going after her, and they look afraid. And at this moment, yeah, Marvel Boy, I guess the spell wears off here. I think that's what happens. It's not really clear, but something happens to Marvel Boy and he's like falling into the ocean. Johnny, still being a hero, even though they're fighting, even though he just nailed him in the back with his telekinetic blast, flies down, grabs Marvel Boy, saves the day. So now the heroes can really, you know, formally be friends again. And now they see Puppet Master and sort of grabbing Alicia. Thing sees it and he says, Speedball actually sees it and says, there she is. Who's with her? And then they see the Puppet Master. So now the Fantastic Four and the New Warriors are all going after the Puppet Master. But don't worry, he's got a plan to escape. What is that plan, Remzo? That plan is a giant robot puppet, and that is what he calls it, in a giant splash page as he holds out a puppet of a robot, and then this giant robot just bursts out, basically just snatches up the Puppet Master and escapes. And so,
you see, Mark, that's what I miss about the 90s.
Giant.
What was
robot
the solution
puppet
to everything?
Giant robot puppet?
Yeah, giant robot everything.
Yes.
There's a lack of giant robots in today's popular culture.
Yeah, and then Alicia is still asking Johnny. She's like, who was that man? Was he really my stepfather? And I'm just thinking, like, why doesn't she know this? Very odd. And Reed says, Sue says to Reed, I just wish we understood what the Puppet Master hoped to gain by kidnapping Alicia. And Reed says, I have a hunch we'll learn soon the answer, honey, and we won't like it. And of course, we're going to learn it very soon. In our very next issue, Fantastic Four, number 357. This is my first ever comic book that I read. This is the one that has a real special place in my heart. We talked about this issue on the Weird Science Comic Podcast with our friend Jim Werner, where I got to go through this issue in grand detail.
We love you, Jim.
Went through this in grand detail, so I might not do a 45-minute rendition of this issue right now. Oh, I was so close. But nonetheless,
you should be proud that you tried.
Didn't try that hard, to be honest. We start off this issue.
Positive thinking.
We start off this issue, and Reed is doing tests. He's doing brain scans on Johnny Storm, because of course he is, because that's what Reed does. He does tests and, you know, he's always testing something. He's either testing new equipment, trying to go into another dimension, trying to check out the negative zone, brain scanning his teammates and his family. This is what Reed does. This is who he is. Apparently, Reed wants to form like a shield around the Fantastic Four's headquarters, and so he's going to biometrically scan everyone, and this shield will then recognize everyone's brain scans or whatever or something, because
does comic stuff, essentially. And, you know, they're all doing it. No big deal. But then Alicia comes into the room and they're like, oh, yeah, Alicia, we're going to scan your brain for this thing because, you know, we want to do this whole force field thing. So we need your brain scan. And she's like, whoa, no. I don't want you experimenting with my mind. And Reed's like, there's absolutely no danger. It's a simple procedure. And Ben chips in with, even Franklin went through it with a whimper. Franklin being, of course, the son of Reed and Sue Richards. And depending on who you ask, maybe the first mutant.
Namor.
Maybe the first mutant. Not the first mutant.
Oh, yeah.
That's
I thought
Namor.
You were about to say Namor's son.
Not the first mutant at all, but maybe a mutant or maybe not. In current continuity, apparently, he is actually not a mutant, but whatever. He just wanted to be and turned himself into whatever. We're not going to go down that path right now. He's a fucking mutant, as far as I'm concerned.
It's a whole thing.
But yeah.
Remember that time during that X-Men fantasy draft 2 years ago? You got disqualified because of
that. There's a lot of controversy surrounding that, and we're not going to get into it. But Jenny tried to sabotage the whole thing is the real point. But anyway,
first she went after Mimic, then she went after Franklin.
Alicia, I'm moving along from that. Alicia is storming off. She's saying, no, I would prefer to have Johnny and me moved out of here rather than subject myself to a needless health risk. And Sue's like, stop it right there, bitch. She doesn't say bitch. This is 1991 Marvel. I am deeply offended by your implications about my husband. The risk only to your health. The only risk to your health is your stubbornness. And she says, consider what Reed has to say. Then decide whether you stay or go. But I won't permit anyone to endanger my family out of, what is this word? PK? P-I-Q-U? I don't know that word, Remso, do you?
Peak.
Do you know that word?
Peak.
It's amazing that there are still words that I don't really, but what does it mean? What does it mean? What is to find peak? Remso,
again?
What can you tell me about peak?
It's a word that people use when they want to sound smart and can't find another more appropriate word.
Exactly. And eventually Alicia basically says, all right, I'll listen, whatever. Meanwhile, we hop over to a secure facility known as the Vault in the Rocky Mountain Range in Colorado. We see an armor guard going up to this guy, and the guy who's in prison is the villain, the Thinker. He's saying, enjoying a little daydream, Thinker? Thinker's saying, oh, I am actually in the process of destroying the Fantastic Four because the Thinker, while his body is in jail, he has a backup body and he can control that body from jail. So he's actually also out of jail. Remso, before we go further, what can you tell me about the Thinker?
The Thinker is autistic.
That is one possible way to put it. I don't know that much about the Thinker, to be honest. I think this episode is like
he totally has autism.
I mean, he's very talented. Say that. I will say that.
Yeah, but he's never actually like done anything evil. Like on the hierarchy of villains,
He tries to murder the Fantastic Four by sabotage. Spoiler alert: by sabotaging their space shield. So that seems somewhat evil.
Yeah, but he does it because he wants to be friends half the time.
Yeah, he just wants attention. Yeah, he just wants a friend.
He literally does. He's like he's a child lashing out. Yeah. He wants to be appreciated.
Anyway, so
he's like violent Rain Man.
So now the Thinker is in his Colorado, not his Colorado, his headquarters, I guess in New York, because the Puppet Master's there like 2 seconds after he was at his wife's grave. And he shows up and he's like, oh, welcome, Puppet Master. I've been expecting you. He's like, I assumed you would be a Thinker, because Thinker always thinks a few steps ahead, you see. And basically he's like,
the autism.
He says, he's like, oh, you heard about this thing with the New Order? He's like, yeah, information is my life's blood. He's like, then you got to know something is up with my stepdaughter, Alicia. She's undergone a strange change, a disturbing transformation ever since she married the Human Torch. She had failed to recognize my voice when I recently attempted to contact her. And Thinker says, I have noted her aberrations. Okay, you're right. I am prepared to share my conclusions with you for a small favor. You must destroy the Fantastic Four. And he says, that's insane. I fought them many times and I've always lost. He's not saying it's insane because I shouldn't be killing people. He's like, no, I've tried this so many times. They always kick my ass. He's like, well, not this time. From the moment you read this information, they are as good as dead. We're going to find out what this plan is in just a bit. But meanwhile, Alicia is at this art gallery with all her weird alien shaped art and talking to this guy. And he's like, you know, Alicia, your new style is quite innovative and dramatic, but no one is buying this shit. Otherworldly abstractions are dead in today's market. The public only seems to want representational pieces from you. You know, like your old stuff. And he's like, well, must I compromise my art? He says, well, only if you want to sell, my dear. So it's only two panels, but it's just so funny, especially like the look on this guy's face while he's looking at this piece of art. I got to give credit to Paul Ryan for the art here, because this face on this guy just says it all. He's just looking at this thing like, I can't believe this bitch is trying to sell this fucking piece of shit. And it's hilarious. Meanwhile, just outside, Johnny Storm is hitting on some teenagers, some teenage girls by twerking.
twirl it by, what's it called? Juggling fireballs. There you go. He says, keep your eyes on the bouncing flame balls, ladies. And she says, this one girl says, oh my God, Kelly will die when she hears about this. He's so gorgeous. And Johnny says, well, for my next act, I'll need a stunningly beautiful volunteer from the audience. Miss, would you care to? Then Alicia comes out and says, Johnny, are you here? I want to leave now. And then this one girl says, is that your girlfriend? And he's like, wife. She's like, oh, too bad. I was looking forward to your next move. Johnny says, yeah, me too. Wow, what a fucking scumbag, man. Not only is he entertaining these very extremely young girls outside while his wife is trying to sell her shitty, weird alien art. He's also like, yeah, sucks she's here, huh? Guess I could have had some more fun with you. My God, Johnny, this is supposed to be a hero, Remzo?
This is like a Ben Affleck marriage.
Oh, what if Ben Affleck paid Johnny? He's probably a little too old, huh? You could young him down.
Nah, I could have seen. I always thought Brad Pitt, like a young Brad Pitt, like from Fight Club, could have been a cool Johnny.
I could see that. And then if that wasn't enough, as Johnny is walking away with Alicia, he is turning around and checking out the ass of this chick. Like, unbelievable, blatant. I'm not sure I'm supposed to like Johnny at all. I think we're supposed to think that maybe he's too young for marriage. Maybe that's what they're trying to convey here or something, or not mature enough.
In Johnny's defense, as a self-proclaimed ass man, if you see a beautiful piece of art, is it wrong to look at it?
I mean, I don't believe so. No, I think that is the least of his offenses. It's more his disappointment at his wife's presence around these other girls that I would say is his bigger crime.
Around these underage girls. Around these
clearly underage teenagers. But anyway, moving along. We're not going to dwell on Johnny's potential pedophilia for too long here. Moving along, sometime later in Four Freedoms Tower, Johnny is getting some marital advice from Sue Richards, quite possibly, even though I did name them the best comic book couple, only because basically purely out of nostalgia. I'm not sure if she's number one person to be given marital advice, to be honest. But I found this pretty funny because, you know, she gives
him better Sue than Reed.
She gives him this advice. Basically, she's like, what does she say? I don't even know what the hell she says. Oh yeah, she's like, you know, it comes with practice. You know, a few of us know how relationships work. We are all kind of like just trying to figure it out as we go. And then right after that, she goes up to Reed and she's like, hey, you got a minute, honey? I hate to disturb you, but something has come up. And she's like, I'm sorry, Susan, did you say something? I didn't even realize you were here.
You know, there's a 9-year age difference between Mr. Fantastic and Sue.
I did not know that. Well, at that one, that was probably creepily. Oh, maybe it runs in the family with Johnny here. I don't know, man. Oh yeah, there was a problem. That means there was probably a point.
She likes him older. He likes him younger.
There was probably a point that was inappropriate then. Once again, I mean, pretty much every relationship was inappropriate in the 1960s in comics. Like Professor X clearly hitting after a 14-year-old Jean Grey. You know, I guess it's just the way things were back then. Ah, the 60s. Anyway, moving on.
Problematic.
So yeah, Reed is ignoring Sue and she's just like, oh, never mind, you seem very entranced with that screen. But in Reed's defense, he was noticing something very important. He says, one of the brain scans I took earlier has been exhibiting some rather intriguing anomalies. Having the computer run a few diagnostic tests, but I won't have the results until late tonight. And she says, well, great. Well, we'll have time to talk. I just had a very upsetting conversation with Johnny because he was basically saying in that previous conversation, he's not sure if he's ready for marriage. You already got married like 60 issues ago. Maybe you should have thought about that. But anyway, it's funny. This is just coming up now, but we'll see where these things go. Meanwhile, the puppet master is in his apartment and he's got I like the touch of the show, like a bunch of little puppets he has handy. He has got like a Captain America. He's got a Thing puppet, Namor puppet, a Hulk puppet. He's ready for just about anything. Man, he could really do a lot of damage controlling all these heroes. You'd think he would be slightly more successful as a villain with this kind of power. But I digress.
If only he wasn't crippled by his weakness, alcoholism.
And he said, I thought you were going to say autism. It's him and the tag team, the Thinker. Yeah, alcoholism and autism.
The alcoholics and the autism.
Double A, bump, MCO. And he's saying that these conclusions are totally insane. They can't be true. And yet they explain everything. Unless I use this material, Alicia is as good as dead, but it will set the Fantastic Four on a path that could ultimately lead to their destruction. And without them, my stepdaughter cannot be saved. So what a conundrum. He's like, if I reveal this, they're going to die. If they die, I can't save her. What are we going to do? We will find out.
Meanwhile, the Thing, who's apparently stoned, is making an insane snack that looks like a bunch of waffles with like ice cream and mayonnaise and peanut butter. I don't know. He's making like a Bill Cosby sandwich here in the middle of the night. And then he hears a crash, hears a noise, and he runs into it says, oh, that came from Stretcho's lab. And he sees someone on the computer, the same computer that Reed was looking at with the weird diagnostic results. He sees this shadowy creature, and being the hothead he is, he doesn't want to wait 1 second to find out what's going on. He immediately gives us his catchphrase, it's clobbering time! And he goes right after the shadowy figure. Now, this shadowy figure, it ducks him, then it moves around, it's stretching, and now it's like changing shapes. You see the shadow change into like this weird dragon bird thing. It wraps around the Thing. Of course, he's destroying a bunch of expensive equipment at the same time because he doesn't give a fuck. Apparently, it's not his money. And he just smashes more equipment trying to go after this shadowy creature. He's running and running, and then he suddenly runs into Alicia in the hallway. He's like, oh, Alicia, what are you doing up? Did I hear or feel something past you? Something slimy? And she's like, no, nothing came this way. Are you all right? You sound very agitated, Ben. And meanwhile, the rest of the Fantastic Four shows up. Reed's like, what's all the commotion, big fella? And Johnny says, is Arsenio ragging on again? Remzo, you're probably too old for Arsenio Hall. I mean, too young for Arsenio Hall. Is that true?
I freaking love Welcome to America.
All right. Anyway, moving on. Have you seen the Arsenio Hall show? The reason he's famous in the first place?
He had a show.
Anyway, Coming to America, great film as well. I'm actually, yes, that's why. That's why. This is like Kirstie Alley being the star of Cheers all over again. Yes, he had a show prior to Coming to America.
She was. Yeah. And Woody Harrelson.
Yes. Eventually Woody Harrelson after Coach died. We should just bring this up every episode until everyone gets sick of it and stops listening. Anyway, moving on. So now they're all trying to search for this thing this creature or whatever the Thing saw. They don't find anything, but and Sue's like, a sweep came up empty, Reed. And he's like, and the only damage seems to have been caused by Ben, as always. He's like, give me a break, Stretch. I don't usually pull my punches when I'm fighting in a dock. this Ben impression is changing rapidly. Johnny flies in and says, I couldn't find any trace of an intruder either, Reed. Intruder or of any forced entry. And Reed says, well, there must be a logical explanation. And then little Franklin wakes up and says, maybe Uncle Benji had a bad dream. That is the entire that is all we see from Franklin in this run here. He goes to bed then. This is before Franklin. I think he's more of a baby here. He's probably like 2 years old here, so I'm not sure if he was even really exhibiting powers at this point yet in the comics, but shortly after he would be forming a pocket universe to hide Onslaught and a bunch of heroes in. So that happens soon if it hasn't happened yet. Meanwhile, Thing is walking in the rain in the trench coat and the hat, the other Marvel disguised outfit. This is basically what the Thing always wears when he goes out to hide his disgusting rocky face. And he runs into the Thinker in the alley. And the Puppet Master. Puppet Master says, please, Mr. Grimm, it's me, the Puppet Master. He's like, yeah, I know. You're like my lifelong nemesis. You've controlled me before. Like, I was in love with your daughter. Yeah, I know you. And he's like, you got to be crazy showing you ugly mug. I had a blast into orbit. And Puppet Master says, please listen to me. You're the only one I can turn to for help. He's like, you got to be kidding me. Why should I help you? Says, we've been enemies in the past. We have always shared a common ground. Our love for Alicia. You must save her. She's in desperate danger. Says, I just seen her a few minutes ago. She looked fine. Why would I trust you? Your power is controlling minds. How do I know this ain't no trap? He says, you must believe that my love for my stepdaughter outweighs any desires that I have for revenge. Meanwhile, we go back. Johnny's talking to Alicia and he's saying, look, it's the truth. Ben can be a stubborn, pig-headed, ornery old cuss. But hallucinations are a bit out of character. I don't think he takes LSD or anything like that. That's my commentary, not Johnny's. And he says, we aren't talking Mr. Imagination here. She said, are you suggesting someone else caused him to destroy Reed's machine? Someone like the Puppet Master? So now she's tossing out this guy as a
dun,
as a
dun, dun. Right.
And he says, anyway, they're talking. And then, of course, again, because he can't just open the door, Thing busts through the wall like the fucking Kool-Aid man here. And he's like, move back, Johnny. And he's like, have you completely flipped out? What are you doing, man? He's like, don't let her near you. And now Thing just goes after Alicia. He's like, he ain't your problem, pal. I am. I'm going to kill your woman. This is hilarious. I mean, it shouldn't be hilarious, but when you think about what's going on here, Ben is just chasing Alicia, like going after her. Like, if he knows something, and we'll find out what this thing he knows is, wouldn't it make more sense to say what that thing is first instead of, so they will at least have an idea of why you're going after what is seemingly just a defenseless blind woman? Might have made sense, but no, this is the Thing. He's a hothead, so he's just going right after her. And Sue is chasing after them to try to stop this melee, but Reed stops her. He's like, no, wait, Sue, you mustn't interfere. And she's like, what? Why are you stopping me? He's like, the Puppet Master is about to, he's like, no,
Not you, not, she's like, oh no, not you too. She thinks Reed is now controlled. So that we dive back over to this melee here where Johnny is just trying to protect Alicia. While she gets away, she's kind of like distracting the thing. Thing throws a blanket on him to try to put him out, which I found pretty funny. But Thing is just relentlessly coming after Alicia, breaking all the fucking walls along the way, breaking through the walls instead of going through any doors. Just literally, he must cause millions of dollars of damage just in these two issues. It's insane how much damage the Thing does here. Anyway, chasing Alicia, chasing her. Again, Johnny comes back, you know, spits fire at him. Pulls out this big column that hopefully isn't holding anything important in this building up and swings it at Johnny. Just going after Johnny and Alicia relentlessly. Johnny's kind of holding back. He's just trying to kind of swat him away, but he's even says, "Alicia, I'm coming for you." Again, maybe while you're in this melee, mention why you're coming for her instead of just letting him think you're trying to murder his wife for no reason again. But this is Ben.
Getting some OJ vibes here.
Big time. And she's saying, and now we see Reed and Sue run down the hallway. And she's like, "I still don't understand why you restrained me." Again, why doesn't Reed explain this while they're running? He's like, "I don't have time to explain it." Well, you had time to say you don't have time to explain it. So couldn't you? There's not that much to explain. "You had to be alerted to the fact that I had already activated my protective biofield." He's like, so they're running, and again a Thing tries to hit Alicia and misses her and like breaks another freaking wall, and now he's about to kill her. He's holding his fist, his big rock fist, over a regular blind woman. He's like, "This is your last chance, show yourself." And she says, "I'll do anything you ask, I swear I will." And Reed says, "I'm afraid that won't be necessary." First Johnny says, "It's about time you two got here. Stop him, stretch your body around him, stop him before." And he says, "I'm afraid that won't be necessary, Johnny." And the puppet master has just been chilling here the whole time, I guess. He says, "As usual, you're quite correct, Dr. Richards. You have arrived to witness the most stunning revelation." And we see shocked looks on everybody's face as we see Alicia's just like kind of shadow from behind. And Thing says, "I got real bad news for you, kid." And Johnny's saying, what is happening to Alicia? She seems to be changing, transforming." And Thing says, "Your loving wife is a stinking Skrull." And we see that Alicia Masters, for who knows how long, maybe we'll find out in the next issue, has been a Skrull. Johnny's been married to a stinking Skrull. Remzo, what'd you think of this revelation?
Man, Johnny got to live vicariously every teenage nerd's dream.
He forgot to put no shapeshifters on his
super hot alien lady. That too.
Yeah. Yeah. Always be specific is what I would say. But yeah, I mean, it was funny, like this being my first comic I ever read, like I didn't even really know what was going on at all here. Like I didn't know what a Skrull was. Obviously, I figured out it was some kind of shape-shifting thing. So I really came in hot in the middle of the storyline. But I think it was partially like I really enjoyed the team dynamic. Like even though it's a little cheesy now, I kind of enjoyed like Thing always going after Johnny. I enjoyed like the Reed like ignoring Sue and things like this, and I really enjoyed
all
this
the regular
twist.
Tropes.
Yeah, all the regular things that you see in comics, and then I really enjoyed this twist at the end. And I think it was this twist in the end that really got me to come back, because they advertised it in the issue, not in the one we're reading on Marvel Unlimited here, but they're like, the next issue after this is the 30th anniversary issue. So they end with a big cliffhanger. They take me right into this 30th anniversary issue, which we are going to go into next. Fantastic Four, number 358. Now, I just told you the last issue was priced $1. This issue, 62 pages, so it's more than double the normal length of, and this is without the ads. So it's probably like an $1.50. Probably an 80-page issue. How much do you think?
$1.50.
$2.50, Remzo.
Ooh, that's a lot for 1990s prices.
Oh, that was a fortune. So basically, I just started reading comics, and already I'm selling out double price for an anniversary issue. They were training me young, that is for sure. That's probably the equivalent of like a $7.95 issue nowadays, like in comparison.
Oh, easily.
All right, so we start off hot here, and now it's Johnny who's going after his wife, I guess. He's screaming, "What happened to Alicia? What have you done to my wife?" And just spraying fire at her. He's like, "How long have you been masquerading as her? Where is she?" Like, it's gonna be hard to answer these questions if you're like blowing fire on her, I would think.
This green bitch got me paying her rent.
And Reed, always the calm one in these situations, says, "Johnny, you must calm down. You won't accomplish anything with this outburst." And Johnny's like, "I'll make her talk, even if it means killing her in the process." I'm like, well, you probably have to pick one. I don't know if you're
kind of defeats
talk
the point.
Yeah, you gotta kind of choose which one you want to do there. And Sue's like, "It's no use, Reed. He's completely out of control." And Reed actually grabs Johnny with his stretchy arm, pulls him, and burns his hand, because of course, even though it's stretchy, it's still a regular hand and on fire. So Reed like burns his hand. Johnny keeps going after Alicia. Sue tries to stop Johnny in one of her like force field bubbles, and Johnny goes freaking supernova. Like supernova is something that he reserves for like this. It takes a lot out of him, and it makes a huge explosion. But that the supernova explosion inside this is enough to break it and break Sue's control over it. But it also, you know, it fucks up Johnny because that's what the supernova does. And this is when he kind of calms down a little bit, comes to his senses. He's like, "I don't need your false sympathy." You know, Ben's trying to console him. He's like, "Alicia used to be your girl before I married her, and I can just—I love these recaps for the readers. Like, who would talk like this? Like, who recaps in real life before I married her, and I can just guess how you feel about this. Go ahead, gloat, say what's on your mind." He's worried about gloating right now. Yeah, and he's like, "Dude, who's thinking about gloating right now? Like we have this fucking Skrull who's your wife. Like, we have bigger things to worry about." Meanwhile, they're kind of just talking now calmly, I guess not really caring what this Skrull is doing. And Reed's like, look, and Johnny's like, "How are your hands, Reed?" He's like, oh, they're fine. I've already immersed them in an antiseptic solution, which will prevent blistering. Of course he has. Very calm. Reed really takes this stuff very well, I have to say. And he's like, "Oh, great. We're all one," and Fink says, "We're all one big happy family again. But this ain't no time to start humming the Brady Bunch theme song." And Reed says, "I agree, Ben. We want answers now," as he points at what is apparently not Alicia Masters. He says, "Who are you?" He says, "Well, my real name is Lijah, and I will tell you everything you wish to know." So now we get a recap. A lot of it is what I talked about. She talks about how she was, you know, growing up in the Skrulls, and, you know, how the Skrulls were the arch enemies of the Fantastic Four, yada, yada, yada. And then this one Skrull came up with this idea to replace one of the Fantastic Four. Or no, yeah. Not one of the Fantastic Four. That was the first idea, but he's like, "There's no way we could replace one of the Fantastic Four. We'd have to have powers and this whole thing." He's like, "Well, maybe we could replace someone close to them instead." So they pull up Alicia Masters, the girlfriend of the Thing. So they have a little recruiting thing, and they choose Lijah, one of the top recruits, one of the top cadets here at Skrull Academy, to turn into Alicia Masters. She, you know, perfects her face and everything, goes to Earth, but then right when she's on her way to Earth, what happens, Remzo? Secret Wars happens, and so the Fantastic Four gets whisked away to Battle World. All sorts of Secret Wars stuff happens, and when they come back, like I said earlier, I don't remember why, but for some reason Thing doesn't come back, and She-Hulk has replaced her, even has her own Fantastic Four outfit. So now Alicia's like plan is kind of thrown off. She's like, "Oh shit, what do I do?" So she decides, and she's like, years of sacrifice and preparation would have been for naught unless I could find a way to salvage the situation. She'd been training for this for years, and so for her whole life, basically her whole adult Skrull life. She said, "So I adjusted my strategy, and I went after Johnny. My original intent was to take the role of a close confidant, but he was so charming, so gentle and caring, that I just couldn't help myself. Contrary to the most sacred laws of deep cover, I fell in love." But then the Thing returned unexpectedly. Aww. In a leotard. He's wearing this ridiculous leotard. I don't know why this was his outfit when he came back. Maybe She-Hulk took his leotard.
You know what they were calling him when he had his? No. So after Secret Wars, he had a limited series called Ranger Grimm or something.
What?
Where he was basically Ranger like Grimm. He was calling himself the Ranger of Battle World.
Oh God! So he just stayed there and
was bad
Ranger for a while.
Oof. Yeah, he was like, that never happened. You know, it was like Kung Fu of David Carradine, where he just goes from town to town, like fighting bad guys and saving people. But it wasn't good, so they quickly wanted people to forget about it. So they brought him back.
Did he choose to stay there in Battle World? The storyline?
Yeah, because at that point he was like, you know, once we leave this place, no one will be here to protect these people. And they don't see him as a monster. They see him as a hero. So he was like, you know, I'm going to stay here because at least people are nice to me.
Yeah, well, I guess I can understand that to an extent. But anyway, he comes back and just right back to his old Thing ways, goes after Johnny because he sees him with his love of his life. But he's the one, this is my point, he's the one that decided to stay in Battle World to be Ranger fucking Grimm and didn't even fucking send a letter back for Alicia. So am I supposed to really be that upset for him that she moved on? Now, yes, it sucks that it moved on to Johnny, someone he knew and was considered family and friend and all that stuff. But still, you're the one that abandoned her and became fucking Ranger Grimm. So chillax with the judgment. Anyway, yeah, we're still getting the recap from Alicia. Eventually, you know, Thing gets over it, and Johnny and Alicia get married. And now Johnny's saying, "Enough, I won't hear any more of your lousy lies. I married the real Alicia, not some slimy Skrull." It's freaking racist, man. "You're not my wife." She says, "No, please, Johnny, it's all true. I am the woman you fell in love with. I shared your bed and your life. I love you, Johnny, and I am carrying your baby."
Snap!
Damn, she pulled a Rapture. She pulled a Rapture on Dragon, or the way around.
Maury.
Here's your real dad. Man, what a day for Johnny, though. My God. Not only does he find out that his wife is actually a shape-shifting alien, she's also pregnant. Poof. What a day. And this is the same day he was checking out that chick. Or what? I mean, man, he was just juggling fireballs.
She got him down.
And meanwhile, Johnny's on the roof contemplating this fucking terrible day. And Thing comes up and says, "How you holding up, kid?" I feel like Thing likes us a little bit, don't you? Don't you get the sense that he's like secretly kind of happy that this is just an alien and it wasn't actually his Alicia the whole time?
As Bruno Mars would say, this chick has him smoking out the window.
This episode is sponsored by Bruno Mars and Michael Jackson, his dad. How you holding up, kid? Don't you worry. Reed's already revving up the old rocket. We'll find the real Alicia. And he says, well, that's part of my problem, Ben. The real Alicia isn't my Alicia. My Alicia, my wife, is a Skrull. And she's carrying our child. I'm going to be a father to an alien. He's like, I want to do the right thing. Is he talking about abortion? I don't think so. He's not rapture here, but I don't know what that is. And he says, well, no matter what, Johnny, you ain't going to face it alone. I might just smash half the building getting mad at yous, but you ain't going to face it alone. He says, when I think of all we share, the secrets, the little laughs, the really good times. I loved her, Ben. I truly loved her. God help me. I still do. As Ben comforts Johnny, which is nice after he tried to murder him last issue. Meanwhile, Reed is working on a spaceship because, well, what are they going to do? They're going to head to the Andromeda Galaxy where the Skrulls live because they got to figure this shit out. That's the first thing. Let's just go to this Skrull fucking planet and try to sort this fucking thing out. They want to get the real.
Here's your pregnant secret agent. Can we please have our blind chick back?
If the Skrulls are so evil, why did they capture Alicia as we'll see, keep her in stasis instead of just killing her? Like, they're Skrulls. Like, they're trying to kill the Fantastic Four, but they can't kill Alicia. Maybe they do have some kind of moral code about killing innocents. Maybe there is a little bit of Skrull honor there.
We are Skrulls, but we are not monsters.
Yes, we will only capture you and keep you in stasis and replace you with a shapeshifter, but we will not kill you.
We'll just take sounds about right.
And Reed's like, look, this is all my fault, Susan. I should have realized Elijah was a fake. And Sue's like, she fooled everyone. He's like, yeah, but I know. I'm fucking Reed Richards. She's smarter than that. I should have known the Skrulls would eventually try something like this. It's my responsibility to anticipate these problems and to prepare appropriate defenses. I should have been prepared. He really screamed here. And he's like, you're only human, Reed. You can't anticipate everything. She's such a sweet wife. You know, he ignores her. He's always building shit, building rockets, cleaning up for Ben shit. And she's always so sweet to her. I think that's why I like them as a couple, even though he's maybe not as deserving of it. He says, I know, but I always realize that I am ultimately responsible for every ill that has ever befallen us since that fateful day. And now, even though it's a 30th anniversary issue, I don't know how many people are hopping on Fantastic Four 356, although I did. Actually, I'm who they wrote this for, because I didn't even know their origin yet. I didn't know anything yet. So Reed gives us a little Fantastic Four recap origin. I'll give it to the readers real quick. Reed Richards is a college scientist, wants to go to space, recruits his best friend, who probably has no business in a thing, along with his girlfriend, who probably has no business going to space, along with her younger brother, who probably has no business going to space. And as you can imagine, things go wrong. They get bombarded with cosmic rays. When they get back to Earth, they feel a little funny. Well, they feel funny because they got powers now. Reed is the invisible woman. She can turn invisible and make invisible things out of whatever. Thing is super strong. You might even call him a Thing. He's just a big, strong rock creature. Reed, Mr. Fantastic, turns into a stretchy type dude, like Mr. Plastic Man, I guess, basically. Who came first, Plastic Man or Reed Richards? Had to be Plastic Man, right?
Plastic Man. Technically, yeah, sure. Technically, I think it was either Plastic Man or the Elongated Man.
The Elongated Man? Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Either way, this is just a copy of those. This is basically a smart elongated man. Yeah, and of course, Johnny turns into the Human Torch, and they are the Fantastic Four. Thank you very much for that recap, Reed. And Reed continues, I must never forget that it was all due to my carelessness, my failure to anticipate and solve an obvious problem. And Sue's like, yeah, actually, this is all your fault. What the fuck was I thinking saying with you? That's not what she said. She says, don't be so hard on yourself. All problems are obvious in hindsight. And then Reed says, that's love speaking. You see, Remzo, they are a great couple. She says, yes, and it's also the truth. Speaking of truth, what the fuck are we going to do about Elijah? Do you really think she's pregnant? He's like, I don't know. I don't even think Skrulls and humans can even mate, so maybe she's full of shit, but we'll figure that out later. I don't have time for a pregnancy test. I got to fix up the spaceship so we can go to the fucking Andromeda Galaxy, which apparently is no big deal to do. Meanwhile, Ben and the Puppet Master are walking in a park, because that's what they do now. They're walking in Central Park, and Ben says, I never much liked you, Puppet Master. Far as I'm concerned, you ain't nothing but a sleazeball and a crook. But you're Alicia's stepfather, and I figured it's only right for me to tell you what's happening. He says, I appreciate the gesture, Mr. Grimm. He's like, we'll find her, even if we got to take on the entire... Wasn't he there? Why did he leave? When did he leave? Why, he was just standing there when they figured this whole thing out, and I guess he just slid out the back door.
Because they need some additional exposition.
Yeah, exactly. And then, Puppet Master goes back to his house, returns to his current lodgings. We see all his other puppets there. He says, the thing is a fool. He doesn't realize that I blame the Fantastic Four for my daughter's abduction, my stepdaughter's abduction. I cannot lash out at them until they have rescued her. The Mad Thinker recently told me he had a plan to destroy the Fantastic Four. Well, I hope he succeeds. While I wish him well, I must make certain that he doesn't interfere with Alicia's recovery. Thus, I must employ my King Cobra puppet. So now, this basically looks like Serpentor from G.I. Joe is this villain, King Cobra. Remso, let's try this. What can you tell me about King Cobra?
He looks like Serpentor from G.I. Joe.
I know nothing about him either. But yeah, they basically, he takes control of this guy, King Cobra, who is in the cell next to the Thinker. And he says, hey, Thinker, you've been looking awful smug lately. He's like, yeah, I've been enjoying a particularly satisfying practical joke. I just told an old friend that I had a foolproof plan to obliterate the Fantastic Four, and he fell for it. And King Cobra says, ha, what a jerk. Thinker says, my sentiments exactly. But Thinker, because he's the Thinker, he knew that Puppet Master would control King Cobra, and he did this on purpose. He's trying to manipulate the Puppet Master into thinking that the Thinker had thought that he had fooled the Puppet Master. Are you following this, Remso? Thinker is now thinking to himself, back in with his other body in his lab or whatever. He's like, that's why I went to such lengths to learn which manufacturer supplied the Fantastic Four with the radiation shielding for their spaceship so that I could change a few decimal points in their specifications. According to my calculations, that shielding will shatter as they attempt to return home. Again, you say it doesn't do anything that evil. This sounds kind of evil. For all practical purposes, the Fantastic Four are already dead. They just aren't aware of it yet. So now the Fantastic Four is getting ready to fly to space. And who joins them? Who joins them in Sue's old outfit? It's Lijah. And Johnny's like, what is she doing here? Why is she wearing Sue's costume? He's like, calm down, Johnny. We need Lijah. And she's also she's the only one that can lead us to Alicia. The uniform will help us to differentiate her from the other Skrulls. He's like, oh, is this before or after she betrays us? She's like, Johnny, please. I gave Reed my word of honor. I'll help you in exchange for my freedom. You of all people should know me well enough to realize that you can trust me. You just found out I was a shape-shifting alien yesterday. Come on. He says, don't kid yourself, lady. I don't know you. I never did. And storms onto the plane. Meanwhile, we get a scene where they're trying to hey, Reed Richards is going to space. And this FAA guy is like, is he clear to fly? He's like, you get him clear. He's Mr. Fantastic. He can do what he wants. So Mr. Fantastic, I guess they shut down all of New York City airspace so this guy can fly to space to chase to go find this capture blind lady. And so they fire off to the Andromeda Galaxy, a trip which apparently doesn't take a terrible amount of time. And we get there and we see this guy being experimented on, this one Skrull. We don't really know exactly what's happening to him, but they're trying to imbue him with some sort of powers, it would seem. They fly up to this Skrull base and they're like, oh, it just looks like a moon here. I don't see anything. And things like, this place looks deader than Yankee Stadium during the playoff season. This is when the Yankees were bad, Remso. This is when I was a Yankee fan in the early 90s and they were historically bad. Terrible. And Lijah says, do not allow appearances to deceive you, Ben. It's like, we just did that for like 5 years, bitch. Beneath the harmless exterior lies untold potential for destruction. Swing us toward that northeast crater. So they land and they get into the scroll base and they're like, oh shit, Fantastic Four is here. Humans, a penetrator stronghold, destroy them. Because that's the first thing we do. And a fight breaks out, of course, because they come in guns ablazing, fists ablazing, fire ablazing, invisible shields ablazing. And Johnny is especially, you know, fired up, just shooting fire everybody. And so basically we just get this big battle here. Goes on for several pages because, hey, this is like a 60-page issue plus ad. So we got space to fill. All right, we got to justify this $2.50. So we get many, many pages of the Fantastic Four battling the Skrulls, who are all changing into, you know, different kind of crazy creatures that they tend to do. But then this other Skrull comes out. He is known as the Power Skrull, and he was imbued with powers specifically meant to counter the powers of the Fantastic Four. So he has like ice powers to counter, Johnny's fire and so on and so forth. So he's basically able to continue. He has like electricity.
Pybok, that's his name. Pybok the power scroll.
Yes. Reed then escapes into the vent as the battle continues. That's kind of meaningless. He just comes out of the vent again in like three more pages. Thing is kind of going toe to toe with Pybok here. He seems to give him sort of the best run for his money, but not quite enough. He uses his ice powers to totally freeze the thing. Although Thing is able at the last second to grab the floor and pull the whole thing out and knock Pybok over. Meanwhile, Reed pops out of the vent, and punch starts punching some Skrulls while Peibach and Thing are just going at it. Sue has the assist with her invisible shield. We then see that Elijah is, she's basically stressing. She's like, oh no, Sue, she's always been kind to me. Where do my true loyalties lie? Peibach is my commander, my former lover. Oh, a little detail there. And yet the Fantastic Four has become my family. I no longer belong in either world. I am Skrull in my body and human in my soul. So she's having a little bit of a moral crisis here as this battle continues. We see here Johnny is shooting at some Skrulls while Peibach is slowly approaching him from behind. And she's just standing there thinking what to do. She's like, you know, Peibach means to butcher Johnny from behind. He strikes to avenge my honor. Johnny deserves to be punished for rejecting me. I hate the way he callously turned his back on the beautiful life we once shared. Yeah, I mean, I think it's understandable after finding out you're an alien, not the person.
Yeah.
I hate it, but I could never hate him. Not my Johnny. Peibach, no. And she turns into this, you know, crazy looking beast, and she takes the bullet. She takes the blast from Peibach in front of Johnny and collapses to the ground. And this is when Johnny cries out, oh God, Elijah. So he does still have some feelings for her. And Peibach says, that traitorous, before he gets cut off. So I assume he's about to say that traitorous something. How could you defy me like that? How could you prefer that earth swine to me? To me, I shall destroy them. Destroy them all. But Thing grabs another pole, which hopefully isn't holding this thing together, and crushes Peibach with this big post and takes him out. So I guess that's all it really needed to do. All you had to do is distract him and get him angry. Meanwhile, Johnny's kind of comforting Elijah. He's trying to take care of her, and he's like, I'm so sorry. She's saying, I'm so sorry, Johnny. Please forgive me. All the lies, all the deception. He's very forgiving. He says, yeah, they don't matter anymore. I'm totally cool. I tried to murder you yesterday, but now I'm fine with it. Nothing matters except you. And she says, oh, man, the lie is just piling on. Now she says, there is no baby, Johnny.
Bitch!
I was just hoping you would return to us. I love you, Johnny. I only wanted you to love me. And he's like, I do too. He's really taking this baby lie very well. Like, he doesn't even bat an eye. He's like, yeah, I lied about the baby. He's probably relieved. He's probably, thank God, I don't have a fucking weird Skrull shape-shifting fire alien baby to deal with on top of all this. He's like, I do, sweetheart. I love you, Elijah. I have always loved you. I always will. And it seems like she's dying here or about to die or something. But as he's like holding her, there's some more commotion and Peibach is emerging from the rubble. My God. So they're saying, all right, we got to go. And Johnny, we got to get out of here. This whole thing is collapsing, probably because the thing just grabbed that post and smashed Peibach with it. And Sue's like, come on, Johnny, we got to go. He's like, no, I can't leave Elijah. And he's like, ain't nothing you can do for hers now, Thing says. Besides, you can't stay that. You can't stay behind. That ain't the way she'd want it. He's like, oh, you're right. Yeah, fuck her. So they just run away. And then meanwhile,
this is a terrible relationship.
One second ago, she's admitting that she lied about this baby, but Johnny doesn't care because he's so busy expressing his love for her. And 2 seconds later, he's like, yeah, fuck her, whatever. Nothing we can do. Oh, this is really hilarious to me. Meanwhile, Reed has found Alicia Masters, who's being held in stasis and looks like Namorita. So he captures her. I think she is literally naked in one panel, it seems. Or they just didn't bother to color in her suit. She's completely in the nude for one. Yeah, it's only for one. This seems like an art mistake of some kind. She's just skin colored entirely. Reed is carrying her out of there. Meanwhile, Peibach is going nuts. He's like so angry about the Elijah thing, and he's just blowing everything up. They get into escape. Reed is flying towards them in this little craft with Alicia. He's like, we don't have a second to spare. So they get in the plane, they fly off, they burst out, and they're like, all right, we made it, cool. But then Reed realizes, wait, something's going on here. The fact that we're still here seems cause enough for celebration. We're alive, but I'm initiating a diagnostic check on the entire Star Cruiser. Something seems to be off here. And meanwhile, Alicia sees the thing, and she goes and hugs the thing because she loves the thing. You know, this is who she last loved. She never had a relationship with Johnny. She's been in stasis this whole time. So she hugs the thing, and you can tell Johnny's kind of like, he's like, am I supposed to be in love with her? Because I thought I was, but actually it's that chick that I just fucking ditched like in 1 second without even thinking about it after expressing my love for her. I don't know. Johnny looks perplexed. He's not sure what he's supposed to think. Meanwhile, there's no time to talk about that because an alarm has gone off. We do a cutaway back to the thinker in his jail cell. And he says, it is exactly 23 seconds past the hour. Isn't time different in space, depending on where you are? Whatever. According to my calculations, the Fantastic Four should have completed their mission and embarked on their return flight. They should be getting a little surprised about now. And we go back to the Fantastic Four ship and we see the shield just literally falling off of the ship altogether. And Reed, you know, kind of tries to explain what's going on. He's like, yeah, basically, you know, an instant before the shielding scattered, the computer discovered a much more serious problem. Apparently, a piece of debris punctured our hyperdrive system. The engine is totally useless for all practical purposes. We are stranded in space
To be continued. I'm not going to continue this on this episode, though, because this goes into a whole bunch of other random stories that really don't have to do with this. It was just, let's get them in space for some other adventures here. Eventually, though, Lyja does actually become maybe not a formal member, but she remains a steady part of the series for a few years, for a lot longer than you would expect. She actually becomes, a staple and does get back with Johnny as a Skrull and goes on adventures and missions with the Fantastic Four. And it's a whole thing. I'm going to say right now, Remzo, this has inspired me because this is where I started reading comics. I'm going to continue on this run until I get to the end of it. Cause I just want to relive the whole thing, relive all the magic. But anyway,
be in the moment.
Why don't we start with you? Why don't you give us your score here for this little run of Fantastic Four?
You know, it's a very classic Fantastic Four story. It might not be like, you know, the rise of the Submariner or the coming of Galactus or something like that. But this was one of the, you know, those moments in the 90s where the Fantastic Four, despite what some would think, we're still finding innovative ways to take this superpowered family drama and make it interesting. And for that, while it might not be a top tier Fantastic Four story, it's definitely one of the fun ones I've always enjoyed. So I'm going to go ahead and give it a 3.5 for the art. There were just some parts where, you know, it's like this, it's like grungy Jack Kirby, but not in a good way. I've never really been a fan of this style because we see this sometimes in the amazing, Spectacular Spider-Man around the same era. You see this a little bit in Uncanny X-Men. I wasn't incredibly keen on it. I'm going to give it, a 3. So I'm going to go ahead and give it a total score of a 6.5. It may sound really bad, but you know, it also didn't scratch my usual test of, is it good for old, you know, seasoned readers, or is it good for, you know, absolutely new readers? It's like a middle ground. So, I mean, if you picked it up and you were a new guy, you'd understand it, much like Mark did. You don't have to spend too much time catching up. But if you've been someone who's been reading it for a while, I guess if you're a Fantastic Four fan, which I've never really been that much of a Fantastic Four fan, unless you count the Ultimate Fantastic Four, it's just all right. So, you know, it's there. I think a 6.5 is probably kind of low compared to some people, but that's just how it goes with me.
All right. Well, I'm going to say, as with...
You seem upset.
No, not at all. We're going to be very close. Or maybe.
He's like, how dare you piss off my favorite comic?
No, I mean, as with a lot of these things where they hold a special place in my heart, there is probably like a little extra nostalgia oomph that I give to it. But no, this is not like a mind-blowing story. It just has a special place in my heart. But it is kind of fun. Like you said, it's totally fun. Like, it's a very easy read. I had a lot of laughs reading it throughout. And it is a pretty big part of Fantastic Four lore. It's also a great introduction to the Fantastic Four because they recap so much in this. So I think it actually is a pretty good starting point because you do get the origin in this story, and you got a lot of the history, Secret Wars, Alicia Masters. Like, if you wanted to start with Fantastic Four and didn't want to just, you know, read the masterworks or read all the old stuff, this wouldn't be a terrible place to kind of jump in, to be honest, because you kind of do get a feel for things pretty quickly. So I would say this is like a very good above average Fantastic Four story. So I'm going to give the writing a 3.5. I'm going to go with you. It's not, I can't quite give it a 4. I don't think it's like spectacular. I'm going to give it a 3.5, and I'm going to give the art a 3.5 too. Like, it's not amazing. It does the job. It's perfectly serviceable. I would even call it above average, because there's really, except for that one panel where Alicia just looked naked for some reason. It's exactly what it needs to be for the art. So it's not quite at the 4, which I would say is like very, very good, but it's just good enough. So I'm going to give it a total of 7 as well.
So that brings it to a 6.5 plus 7, a 13.5 out of 20.
Yeah, 13.5. Only a tick below our Morbius Bond of Blood score last week. So I would say that would firmly keep it in the, what? In the Sunday read range. It's a fun Sunday read.
I could dig it.
It's a fun read, and it doesn't. This flies. This really does fly. I read this whole thing in like 30 minutes, the 3 issues. So it's fun. All right. Well, that being said, Remzo, well, by the time this airs, you will have already probably survived your bachelor party. But I'll just tell you, have fun at your bachelor party, and then next week maybe we'll get some updates.
All the juicy details.
You did promise that if we got, what'd you say? If we get
If we could get two annual patrons by the end of January, I will do a special edition Remso rant telling you everything about the bachelor party from takeoff in Milwaukee till I leave Nevada.
So if you become an annual patron, not only could you get two free months, you can also possibly, if you're the first one, you can get the Inferno collection from Eric and you could unlock, not just for yourself, but for the entire Second Print Patreon, the secrets of Remso's Bachelor Party. I want this to happen, please. It might be the only way I ever find out the full truth. So please, somebody do this. At least two of you. Applies to current patrons as well. But thank you guys so much. For anybody out there as well, of course, one of the best ways, easiest ways to help the show is to leave us a 5-star rating and a great review over on Apple Podcasts. Whether you use that or not to listen to podcasts, it is the number one platform, and really getting more reviews, getting more ratings there really does help us pop up in those algorithms when people are searching for dorky comic book podcasts to listen to. So that's why we're here. Remso, any last words?
No, folks, be awesome, be fantastic, be excellent to each other, and remember, if nothing else happens, you can always read comics and change the world. Good night, America.
Adios.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.